and gentlemen, please put your hands together for the hardest working man in the game industry, the one-man vortex of gaming information, the man who keeps Yoshi as a family pet, ladies and gentlemen, Gaming Steve!
Hey there, welcome to Gaming Steve, the home of intelligent game discussion. I'm your host, Stephen Glicker, and in this week's show, I'm going to get right to it and go to Name That Game, where I announce the winner of a free game console. Then I'm going to be covering this week's news. Then I have an extended, expanded edition of ShowMail, where I answer tons of unique and interesting questions. And then final thoughts. So this is the special holiday edition, which means that it's kind of a little quiet this week. All the PR guys from all the firms and game companies are gone. They're closed this entire week. Everyone's taking this week off. All my friends, they're off right now. They're not doing anything. Unfortunately, for people like myself with small kids, when school's closed and there's nothing to do, that doesn't mean that I get to sit around and play video games. I'm sure all you college kids out there and kids that are actually in school listening to this right now are doing that. No, in fact, I actually have been playing less games this week. In fact, once the kids go back to school is when I'll actually finally get to play more games. But I actually am playing a game that I never got to play during the actual year. This is the time of year where I read everyone's top 10 lists and everything. And one game that kept coming up over and over again is a game called Persona 3, which is a game for the PlayStation 2. It's a Japanese role-playing game that is bizarre, even for Japanese role-playing game. This one is pretty bizarre. You do combat by shooting yourself in the head with a gun and summoning demons to fight for you. I'm kind of surprised the politicians, I guess because this was so under the radar, politicians didn't take notice of this one. But boy, even just seeing that imagery of you taking guns and pulling it to your head, it's bizarre. I mean, it's all explained in some hokey pokey weird way, but it is a bizarre game. But it's so far pretty good. It's definitely a hard to find game. It's one of those games you go to GameStop or any game site doesn't even list it anymore, even though it came out this summer. Actually, I remember seeing it because it's in an oversized box and it comes with a little hard bound book with some pictures in it. But I actually found this, of all of places, I found this game at Sears. I was there shopping for, believe it or not, a washer and dryer, and right next to washer and dryers were all the video games, and I just thought I'd wander on over. I've been looking for this in the used games aisle, and there it was. Not only that, but the video game selection at Sears was pretty fantastic. I couldn't believe it. I haven't been in a Sears since, 30 years. I can't even remember the last time. Actually, I think it's been about 15 years was the last time I've been in a Sears. I went in to get a wedding present for a friend of mine, and before that, I was a little kid. I just, there's no real reason to go to Sears, but I was pleasantly surprised by their selection of video games. Their selection of rare and hard-to-find video games was pretty extensive. I imagine they'll never restock them. It's probably varies wildly from place to place in the country, but I was stunned at how good the video game selection was of really, weird to find games. Things you definitely wouldn't find at Walmart or Target or GameStop, heaven forbid. They keep hard to find video games for more than a day. If you're looking for a weird game, maybe check out Sears. I was kind of surprised. But that's what I've been playing right now, a little bit of Persona 3. I'm also trying out a few weird things in Mass Effect. I actually, I do like playing the Renegade, I'll tell you that. It's, it's one of those games, if you play the Renegade, you get some pretty interesting reactions. You seem to punch out a lot of people, which is a little shocking. But unfortunately, as much as your castmates or your squad mates react to you, punching out random people throughout the game, they don't really care too much in the long run. Every so often they'll say something, but I really wish they did a little bit more like in Baldur's Gate 2, where you actually could have party members fight vehemently and literally just start attacking each other because they hated each other so much and they had so much problems with their beliefs. But I guess even BioWare is watering down their games a little bit to make it a little bit easier to for the mass market to accept, and obviously it's working, but that's a whole other topic. So let's get into the special holiday edition of Gaming Steve, the abbreviated version, and we'll go right to Name That Game, where I'm going to announce the winners.
Name That Game!
So as most of you know, I normally have Name That Game, which is a segment where I play a esoteric, odd video game clip, and you write to me and tell me what it is, and then if you get it correct, I send you a prize. For 2008, I think I might change that around, and I'll tell you why. I had a special, you know, since this podcast was out for so long, I had a special edition where all you had to do was write me, tell me your favorite video game, you know, give me your forum name. And by the way, a lot of people, not a lot, I'd say about 10, 15 people didn't tell me their forum name. And I actually chose a few of you. I guess it's just luck or blind luck. Because when I rolled the die to see who would win, and I pulled one or two, and they didn't have a forum name. And I looked at a couple times people sent emails. So sorry. Sorry that you guys didn't follow the rules. But if you just sent me your name and your forum name and your favorite game of the year, you can win one of three prizes. The third prize is some gaming swag. I got like so much gaming. I have a drawer full of gaming t-shirts, from everything from Auto Assault to stuff from like E3 from like 1998 to the most recent stuff. I have Mario stuff, Wii stuff, things like that. Actually, I like the Wii stuff, but so I'm going to give you some free gaming swag. Second place is a free game. It doesn't matter where you live, wherever it is. You know, hopefully you have it on an Amazon in that country, and I can just go and I'll get you that game and ship it to you. And then first place is a free game console. I do warn you, if you do pick a Wii, if I can't find it, you might have to wait a little while. So we'll talk, whoever wins. So the way I did this is I got approximately 200-plus entries, which actually was surprising because, you know, thousands of people listen to this show. Actually, tens of thousands, I would say. Quite frankly, I'm doing this. Yeah, tens of thousands listen to the show, at least the last three episodes. So only a couple hundred people entering is pretty low. So I don't know. It seemed like a pretty easy thing to do. All you had to do was write me an email. So next time, you know, come and enter. You have a good chance of winning. And all I did is I took everyone's entries. I took my 10-sided die and my 20-sided die and a few other die, and I just rolled, and that's how I got them. So people wonder how I do it. That's how I do it. And the only way it came to me is because my 3.5-year-old daughter right now is really into dice, and she loves the 20-sided die. It's a very educational piece because not only is it fun to play with, and it teaches your kids about gaming, but they also learn the numbers. So those of you with little kids out there, but not too little because they try to eat the die, and I always have to tell her to take it out of her mouth, that the D20 is an excellent teaching tool. So with that, let's see who won third place. I don't know if I could find a drum roll, but it is... Dun-dun-dun-dun. For my game of the year, I have to say it's Super Mario Galaxy. While I agree that Portal was great, playing Mario Galaxy with my son has brought back all the feelings of gaming that I first fell in love with. The simple fact that I can hand a 4-year-old the controls and just gets it wins me over. Seeing the look on his face when he got his first star brought a flood of memories back to me when I grabbed my first flagpole on Super Mario Brothers. I'm sure as a parent you have this experience as well. Thanks for the awesome podcast and news and all your hard work. And the registration name is Ninja Bullet. So Ninja Bullet, you have won third place. That means you'll get some cool gaming swag. So Ninja Bullet, write me and we'll exchange information and you will get that. By the way, everyone wrote me incredibly long. Next time, the next game I'm going to do... contest, I'm going to have this in the comment section because people wrote me paragraphs. everyone did this. They wrote me paragraphs going on why their game choice was what they said it was. In fact, that was probably one of the shortest emails, the one I just read. I'm not going to read everyone's full email, but it was great. I was really stunned. I guess if you give away something very big, people feel like they have to write something very big. But it was actually beautiful to read everyone's entries and to say why, and you know, really evoke the feelings that they had with what made that game so good. And it was better than any top 10 list, I can tell you by far, is reading everyone's entries. Next up, for second place, a free game that's not Rock Band or Guitar Hero, but anything else that I get my hands on that's $60 or less. It is, let's see, while I wish I could play Spore, it's the best game of 2007, and it's still not out, so I'll have to give second place game, which actually came out this year, which is actually The Sims 2 Seasons. I'm a huge fan of The Sims, another Maxis game, and this one did not disappoint. Seasons brought an awesome feel to the game, where you could really experience every season, from cold, snowy winters to the hot summers. I'm also a sucker for skill-based games such as fishing and growing crops. And the winner is Hydro Mancrix. Yes, I have no idea if I pronounced that right, even though it's Hydro. Hydro from the forums, actually pretty well known. You have won. Yeah, congratulations, Hydro. So he actually wrote a lot more in there, but I kind of gave you the Cliff Notes version. You are the only person who put down Sims 2 Seasons. That's an expansion pack, but I'll let that count. But hey, I'm a little stunned. I have not seen that anywhere on anyone's list in any way, shape, or form. Then again, I chose Lord of the Rings Online, which has been nowhere on anyone's lists. And in fact, some people say it was too much like WoW. And I'm kind of shocked because, yes, you know what? It is a lot like WoW. And guess what? A WoW is a lot like EverQuest. What a surprise. You know, these games all base upon each other. But, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. It's going to take a while before another game actually dethrones WoW and is completely different. I doubt that's going to happen for quite some time. But yeah, Sims 2 Seasons. So congratulations, Hydro. Get in touch with me and we will get your game. And then finally, the person who won the big system, a free Wii, a free PlayStation 3, or PlayStation 2 if you really want, a free Xbox 360, or a PSP, or a DS, any one of those one items you can get. Doesn't matter what country you live in. I know everyone kept writing me because I got a lot of foreign listeners, overseas listeners. No, I don't care. Doesn't matter. I sent a lot of this stuff overseas. Let's see what we got here. We got, I'll read it first. Glad to see you back podcasting. The game of the year for me is Crysis. I bought a 880 GT just for this game. I played through the single-player demo. There was a couple of good hours of gameplay in there and quite a bit more if you just want to goof around. He really likes the destructible structures. He really likes the driving controls. He really likes the quick save features. He has a whole bunch of reasons on here. He found it actually pretty playable and enjoyable on his ancient rig, but he actually wants to spend $2,000 on a brand new rig so he can play it properly. I hear you. Even on my killer insane machine, this thing is a little chunky. He did finish it. He loved it quite a bit. He also had Portal as a close second, and he also loved Assassin's Creed. Repetitive, yes. Flawed, yes. Extremely addicting with great combat systems, so I don't mind the first two. Yes. Actually, I like that. That was very funny. And it is A. Rogan. A. Rogan, you have won. So, A. Rogan, get in touch with me. Actually, all three of you, you can get in touch with me at game@gamingsteve.com. It goes right to me. I'll be on the lookout for your emails. So, once again, third place, Ninja Bullet. Second place, Hydro. And third place, A. Rogan. Congratulations to all of you on winning the elusive Name That Game contest for 2007. And look for a new Name That Game contest starting next year with kind of a new way I'm going to be doing it. And I'll explain that probably later in the end of the show. But with that, let's get right to the news.
Gaming news! Gaming news!
Hey there, so welcome to the news. This week is actually pretty light. Everyone's off this week. You know, this is like all the PR firms are completely closed. No one's around. Everyone's taking vacations. Everyone's gone. The publishers are all gone. All the game magazine publishers are gone. All the video game editors, most of them for the big magazines and the big websites are gone. You know, this is the time of year everyone takes a break. In publishing, they do that. They force everyone to take a break. Usually, it's like when you see all these double issues. It's almost like everyone like decides, okay, the last week of the year and the middle of July and August, let's just take a break and we'll just close down. And everyone has to take a vacation at the same time. Like if you work in publishing, like Entertainment Weekly is a good example. They always have those double issues, and that's the 2 weeks in which everyone must take off if they want to take off and they have like an editorial job, because otherwise there's no other time. And so it's just dead. And in fact, there really wasn't that much. So, you know, probably a little smaller news section than normal, but I found a few things here. First of all, Duke Nukem Forever, the new teaser trailer came up. It looks okay, and they didn't really show you that much. I mean, you know, the graphics look good and all, but who knows? You know, is that an in-game engine? No one knows. It doesn't tell you anything. But let me tell you, when they said this thing was coming out, every single person in the world was writing about it. So a couple weeks ago, someone wrote me a question thinking, you know, will Duke Nukem Forever, you know, will it be any good? You know, this is not well, at least not yet. It's not Daikatana. It's just not the same thing, you know. Daikatana was one person's reputation, and he kind of insulted the whole industry. And, you know, there was a lot of things. There was a lot of problems with that game. This is based upon, you know, an existing game, which really was absolutely fantastic at the time. You know, and Duke Nukem has been around for a long time, since 1991, the original Duke Nukem. So this is, you know, a very, very good game, the original first-person shooter. And then Prey came out, and Prey did great. You know, Prey really did absolutely had fantastic sales. So who knows? You know, I think that this game will be given the benefit of the doubt. And if you want to see something interesting, is go to GameTrailers.com and look at the 2001 trailer that was shown at E3 for Duke Nukem Forever. It is fantastic. It actually looks really good. And it looks like a lot of the game was done. And it takes place in Vegas and, you know, aliens attacking and all that. And in fact, if you see the aliens in the 2001 trailer, they're also in the 2007 trailer. So I'm wondering if they are just going to take the gameplay and the script and what they built in 2001, almost use the game that was built in 2001 as a prototype that they used like for market research, and use that and build it for a game that they made in 2008. That sounds crazy. This actually happens all the time. All the time. You would not believe how much they will often build games using either existing or older engines. They'll build out levels because they can, and they just throw on like placement, you know, art they already have there, and then test it out. You know, I'm just thinking off the top of my head. EA did this with Command & Conquer 3. You know, Command & Conquer 3 was actually started up a couple times, and they tested out various things before they really did it. Then they, you know, they came out with Lord of the Rings, you know, Battle for Middle-Earth 2. They used that engine to then build, like, you know, Command & Conquer 3. So they kind of tested things out using a different franchise. So, you know, they could have done what they did with Prey, learn what they used, you know, learn what they did when they came out with Prey earlier, was it last year, I think, yeah, last year, and kind of use those lessons learned and put it towards Duke Nukem Forever. Either way, I think it's, you know, I'm looking forward to it. I hope it comes out sometime in the next year or two, not in 2013, but I'm going to be getting it. And you know what, you saw what the internet went nuts when this thing came out. There's definitely still a ton of love for this game, and people want it. I think they actually want it to succeed, and I think it's going to do, unless it's terrible, it's going to do really well. Just the pre-orders alone are going to be very high, especially if they really announce a real solid date, and they start showing, they do what Assassin's Creed is, you know, take that little bit of goodwill that they can, you know, get, show very little of the game, just keep it all a secret. You know, just keep the whole game a secret, just show a little bit that really, really kicks butt big time, and then just ride that. Ride that till the game comes out. I guarantee the pre-orders will be fantastic. They'll get a ton of word of mouth. You know, going to the game magazines and getting good press, not that hard to do, as we all know, after what happened in GameSpot. It's really not that tricky. So anyhow, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Check out the 2001 trailer. You'll be surprised how much was done. Next up, we have something new. Any PlayStation 1 game is playable on your PSP if you have a PlayStation 3. All right, that was a little confusing. So if you have a PlayStation 3 and a PSP, and you update it to the latest versions, and you get remote play working, you can play a PS1 game on your PSP if you have backwards compatibility. Wow, that was really complex. Even I'm lost and I'm reading all that. Long story short is that you can take your PS1 game and throw it in your PS3. That is very cool. I tried it out. You know, it's definitely fun for, you know, strategy games, role-playing games. You know, there's a lag, but those really work out quite well. My biggest concern is that, you know, it's not something, you know, you can't really use it. I mean, I guess if you hook up remote play and then you go somewhere in the world and you keep your PlayStation 3 on and you have a Wi-Fi spot available, you can log in and use your system. There's, you know, it's a very convoluted way of doing this. And not only that, they're not even advertising it. It just sort of happened. Again, I don't understand PlayStation's, you know, their tactics are very, very odd. You know, they have a great game for the PlayStation 3 out right now, Uncharted, the Naughty Dog game. You know, this game is great. Really a good game. This could be the game that causes people to go out and buy a PlayStation 3. There was so little press on this game. all right? I didn't even know it was coming out, okay? I didn't even know it was coming out until a few weeks before it came out. I knew this game was being developed. It totally fell off the radar. And I am stunned. Was this even on a cover? I think it was on Game Informer. But this game just like totally fell off the radar. Everyone was talking about Ratchet and Clank and Assassin's Creed, but Assassin's Creed wasn't a PS3 exclusive. If that was a PS3 exclusive, and they wanted it, if you remember, they wanted to make that a PlayStation exclusive. If they made that a PS3 exclusive, that could have done it. Because look at how big Assassin's Creed. People really wanted to play that game, but they didn't do it. So hopefully they'll figure it out. I tell you, God of War 3, that could be it. You know, I hope that comes out soon. But that's they just need one game. They just need one killer game to propel the PlayStation 3 into everyone's home and make it a must-buy system. Next up, we have the big pissing war between Activision and Harmonix. As you probably have heard, is that Activision is right now not allowing Guitar Hero 3 controllers to be used with Harmonix's Rock Band. And there was a whole bunch of going back and forth why this is, and Activision came straight out and they said, and here's an exact quote, that we believe that we should be compensated for the use of our technology. And of course, you know, big bag Activision says that, and then Harmonix comes around and says, well, really, we're really and truly not looking at this from a financial standpoint. We're looking at this from the consumer standpoint. Yeah, of course. So let's break this down. So EA and Harmonix, you know, they want people to go out and be able to use the Guitar Hero 3 guitars with Rock Band. And why is this important? Because it comes with one guitar. Well, if you have, you know, a whole bunch of friends, one person can play a guitar, another person can play bass. So you can have two guitars going. You get a full Rock Band experience. And the problem is there's just not enough guitars in the stores right now. There's not enough peripherals out there. And, you know, they're saying, well, I don't know why Activision's being such a pain in the neck. Why aren't they allowing us to use their guitars? You know, everyone has Guitar Hero 3. Well, I'll tell you why. I'm actually on Activision's side 100% on this. It's like, yes, this is from a consumer point of view. Yes, it would be nice for them to do this. But for Activision, there's no reason. Why would they do that? Why? There's absolutely no plus for them at all. Okay? They're already destroying, you know, Rock Band is, as big as it is, the numbers are good, it's nothing compared to Guitar Hero 3. Guitar Hero is obliterating Rock Band. So it's not going to make people go out and buy more Guitar Hero 3, okay? If anything, it'll just make people go out and buy Rock Band, and not even the full game. You see, here's the secret. You can go and buy Rock Band, and you can go and buy just the game itself. You don't have to buy the $170 set. You can go and just buy the game like you would buy any other game. So if I'm already done with Guitar Hero 3, why wouldn't I just go out and buy Rock Band and then play that like I would play Guitar Hero, which I'm sure a lot of people are doing even when they buy a $170 set. Well, that's where it all stems from. Why would I want someone to play a direct competitor of my game using my peripherals? I want to get paid for that privilege. So Activision is correct. I know a lot of people, according to some of the articles we've been reading, a lot of people are taking Harmonix's point of view. But again, this is from a business point of view. Activision could not care less if you have a good time with Rock Band, okay? They don't care. They want Rock Band to fail. You think they want someone else to come in here and steal their thunder? They have one of the biggest franchises in gaming history. You think they want someone else to come in, the original people from Guitar Hero no less, and steal their thunder? Of course not. In fact, they're going to do everything in their power to kill them. So yes, you can go on and on and say, oh, it would be very nice, but this is the world of finance, of money, of billion-dollar companies, you know, battling each other on every single little thing. You think they're going to do this just because you want it? Hello. No, they don't. They do not care about you. It's just that simple. Yes, Harmonix is being the cleanup stand act and they're the class act. They're the ones that are coming out looking like angels because they're fighting for your right. But you know what? They don't care either because they do care. They do have invested interest. They want their game to sell more. And if you can use their guitars, that, you know, Guitar Hero 3 guitars, then they'll sell more games, more copies of their game. So don't think that they're being totally innocent in this either. Everyone has the same incentive. They want to sell more of their games. It's just that simple. Next up, Japanese are buying PSPs like crazy if they're red. So this came out in December 16th. The PSP sold 184,000 units in Japan, doubling the previous week's figure of 91,000 units. So what does this say? Well, it says that people like colors on their machines. They like colored units. They like red PSPs. This is actually not surprising. Nintendo obviously makes a whole mess of money by coming out with new DSs on a continual basis and just adding a little bit more features to them, like coming out with like a retro version or something else, and they sell them. You know, people have been proven over and over again that they will rebuy the same unit over and over again if there's something to it. You know, a few years ago when they were talking about the Xbox 360 and they were talking about, Jay Allard was going on and on about, you know, Xbox 360 is all going to be about personalization. This is going to be the year that you really want to personalize. That's why they had the removable faceplates. That's why you were going to have like your icon and your gamer tag. And, you know, they just want to make it so that it's your experience. He was right. You know, this was actually really started with Steve Jobs with the iMac when he was showing, you know, people buying computers in different colors, and it was a monster success. And then obviously the iPod, and now you're even seeing it in more consumer, you know, it's like it starts there, but it really leaches into other things. I talked about this earlier, washers and dryers. You know, I went there where our dryer broke and we had to go buy a new one, and we went to go there, and you know, you've seen probably those really cool fancy ones, and they come in all these different colors. My wife's like, who knew that these things were coming in different colors? Well, obviously, because they're sort of a status symbol. It's something that's very expensive, and quite frankly, if you wanted like the white dryer, it's $800, but if you want the black one, it's $900. And I was asking salespeople, you know, what do they sell more of? And they said, believe it or not, even though the colored ones are more expensive and they have a lot more white ones, they're almost neck and neck in sales, that people like to buy the colored ones. And you know why? Personalization. It's just that simple. It's been proven. This has been proven time and time again. You know, it's with cars, with everything. And now with electronics, you know, if you can go out and buy an iPod and yours can be a slightly different color than someone else's and you can just add that little bit more customization, it's nice. And Sony, you know, they finally, I don't know what took them so long. Again, it's like, you know, they came out with the white, and that's pretty cool, but, you know, come out with lots of different colors. You know, it costs a little bit more. I know it's very complex. It actually is not that easy to do, but do some market research, come out with a few different colors, and, you know, do limited edition runs, even better. You know, it's like come out with, I don't know, you know, 250,000 reds and then discontinue them. Come out with 250,000 blues and discontinue them. You know, just make that demand. You know, if people know things are limited supply, oh my God, they want to go out and buy them. Again, I'm kind of surprised that that it's taken them this long to figure this out. Mass Effect book is coming out next summer, Ascension. So normally I really am not that excited about video game books, but something like Mass Effect, which I reviewed last week, and I said as a story I gave it a 10 out of 10, the game not so much, but you know, this is one of the rare video games and where you actually want to buy the book, because playing the video game is like reading a book, and it is, you know, it's all story driven. They came out with their previous book, Revelation, which was a prequel to Mass Effect. I've not read it, but I heard a lot of people really loved it. I'll pick it up and read it. It's probably an incredibly quick read. But next summer, Mass Effect Ascension is coming out. It's going to actually bridge the story between Mass Effect 1 and Mass Effect 2. So, you know what? I bet you it's a big seller. You know, I just wonder if they're going to be able to. They probably can't. It's like they really built this incredibly detailed universe. And in fact, here's a weird thing. It's like if you play Mass Effect, I was thinking about this. I didn't comment on this last week. This is actually the codex for the Mass Effect universe, and they actually put it into a game, which is pretty sneaky of them. For those of you who aren't familiar, a lot of times authors will do this. In fact, they're on their insistence of their editors, is they will put together a codex or a compendium or whatever you want to call it of everything in the world. David Eddings did this, and in fact, he published it for his books for the Belgariad series, and it's fascinating. You know, he comes out with every single country and how the governments work and what units they use for money and, you know, like what their, you know, everything, like their culture, every aspect of the country is written down. And then they use that as a reference when they're actually writing the book. So they kind of construct the world first. They write it all out. They structure it. And then that is used when they actually write the book. And Mass Effect was very cool because they did that, and then they put all that information into their encyclopedia, into their codex. What a surprise. Oh, they even use the same word. Into their codex in the game itself, and then they let you have that information very, very small pieces. They kind of piecemeal, you know, like a breadcrumb, let it out. And it just kept you interested. Like, you wanted to know about the Asari culture, and you wanted to know about how the Taurians, you know, about their culture. It's great. It really, they did a great job of that. So now you have the entire Mass Effect universe built, and when these books come out, you'll know. You know, the same way is that if I tell you, in Star Wars or Star Trek, you know, oh, a Klingon versus a Ferengi, who's going to win that? Well, you know, because you know instinctively what the difference is between those two homeworlds. So it's like, oh, one's a warrior race and one's really a financial race where they're all traders and merchants. You know, there's no contest, blah, blah, blah. Like, well, why do you know all that stuff? Same thing, because they all do that. So anyhow, I'm going to be pretty excited about this book. I hope they actually reveal things and kind of move the story forward, and that just like take some small part of what happened in Mass Effect and expand upon it, or talk about something that happened like on the side while you're doing your main quest. I have a bad feeling they might do that because they might not want to give away too much what's going on in Mass Effect 2, but we'll see. Next up, I have a Chinese teen burns a classmate and blames World of Warcraft. After losing a school fight, a 17-year-old boy in Beijing recently covered a classmate with gasoline and lit him on fire, claiming that he, quote, had lost himself in World of Warcraft and he was committing the crime. He had transformed him into a fire mage. The boy was sentenced to 8 years in prison and ordered to pay approximately $103,000 in U.S. dollars. So, yeah, when I read stories like this, it's just sad because, you know, it's I don't know. I mean, these people, they lose themselves. Who knows if this is true? I always think of the D&D defense in the 70s when people used to blame Dungeons & Dragons for their addictions or their problems or, you know, their issues. But, you know, at the same time, I've had more than a few friends have some serious, serious problems because of MMO addiction. I have one friend of mine, and unfortunately, he's not even my friend anymore. It's that this guy plays World of Warcraft so much, and he's probably one of the most powerful people in this game. I mean, this guy, this all he does, and this is all he talks about. He's totally lost in the game. You know, he's totally absorbed by it. He plays it constantly. It affects his life. It affects his work. It affects every aspect of his being, and he just cannot stop playing it. And, you know, if you even try to talk to this guy, this is all he talks about, is World of Warcraft and every aspect of it, and he'll talk about forever and ever about how this one weapon is slightly better than this other one, and he'll go on about balance, and I can see, you know, it's like, you know, he's obsessed with it, and I can see, you know, the wrong type of personality. This can easily happen. But again, it's just sad. And, you know, you read about these things, about these addiction clinics for MMOs, and you might laugh at them. But I had a friend, she failed out of Harvard. And this is back in the 90s, you know, when the MMOs were all MUDs, you know, they're all graphical based. And she totally failed out. I don't even know if she ever graduated. I mentioned her on the show a few times that she just could not get it together. She just could not, you know, she could not stop playing. Heck, when I went to Carnegie Mellon, I had a ton of friends who failed out because they cannot stop playing NetTrek. They could not stop playing. It was like a Star Trek MUD at the time. They just couldn't stop playing and they failed out. You know, and this is like, you know, and you hear about these people, the kids dying because they, you know, they'll leave them at home by themselves and they go out and they play MMOs in a cafe. It's just sad. Amazon sells 17 Wiis per second. So Amazon released their sales figures, and this was getting all the headlines, and it is impressive. Is that they had, let's see, the Wii was one of their very best-selling systems. When it was available, it was selling 17 per second. Harry Potter, The Order of the Phoenix was the top-selling DVDs, and on top of that, they also had, let's see, Apple MacBooks, which is pretty surprising, KitchenAid stand mixers. I know, I have five myself. And Super Mario Galaxy and Call of Duty 4 were also the top sellers of the year. So, yeah, I mean, to be honest, I myself, you know, like Amazon is one good thing about Amazon is, you know, especially if you're buying systems like that, That's how I bought my PlayStation 3. You know, there's no tax. You just buy it. It shows up at your door like a day or two later. What more do you want? It's a stage. It's like, I don't think I ever go out and go shopping if I don't have to. I mean, everything, I basically go to Amazon first, and if I can't find it there, then I'll start going to other sites. And if I have to, I'll get into the car and drive somewhere. But it's pretty rare. You know, it's pretty rare that you could do that, especially for expensive systems, because till they fix that loophole, not paying tax, and living in a state like New York where it's over 8%, you know, that's a hefty amount, especially if you're buying a $250 system. So every penny counts. And free shipping, man. Free shipping. What more do you want? And then finally, while we're talking about that sort of stuff, there's a lot of good deals out there on Steam right now. Every single game on Steam until I think it's January 2nd or 3rd is 10 to 50% off. And there's some great games out here. The Orange Box is $37.45. BioShock is $37.45. Call of Duty 4 is $45. Overlord, which I loved that game. Oh my god. If you liked the old Peter Molyneux games, you'll like Overlord. It's just that simple. I know a lot of people had weird mixed feelings of this. It's just, if you like Peter Molyneux games back when he actually used to make pretty good games, then you'll like Overlord. End of sentence. $35, $36. I'll just round it up. Here we go. Psychonauts. Psychonauts, hands down, top five best games ever made, period. End of discussion. There is really not much better than Psychonauts. $10, okay? Let me tell you, are you bored right now? Go buy this game. And if you have a 360 controller, hook it up to your PC. It's a little easier to play on using a controller because it is a platformer. But this game is fantastic. End of story. And RoboBlitz, that's actually another really fun game, $13.50. Another good place to go is Gamefly. Gamefly is selling a ton of their games. Not the greatest selection, not exactly AAA titles, I would say, but there's a good selection there. I would just look around. Cheap-Ass Gamer is a great website, and they're listing, because these things come and go. Like, Go Gamer had a great deal just yesterday where they had World in Conflict for $20, which is a great real-time strategy game. But now it's gone. It was a one-day deal. So look around. You'll find some, you know, sales here and there. Crysis I saw kind of cheap a few places. So you know, definitely look around. This is the week. If you wanted to buy something, you know, check it out. And also, if you did buy something, it was like Assassin's Creed and the Simpsons game at Best Buy went down from $60 to $37. Go back and tell them, because they'll give you back your money. They'll price match. Like, if you bought the game like a day or two before it went down, if you go there and talk to them, they'll give you back, or they'll give you a store credit at least. So just make sure you do that, because I know a lot of people I heard were pissed about that. So that's it for the news, and then I'm going to go to the super expanded show mail. So last week I wrote people and I said, please send me some letters and questions, because I only had one question for last week's podcast. And boy, that was a mistake, because you guys just piled on more questions than I could ever answer in my lifetime. There's a lot of questions in there. I'll try to write you guys back. But because it's such a slow week, I figured I have a stack here. I'll just go through them, answer as many questions as possible. And again, if you send me an audio question, I will almost always, 99.999% of the time, I will play your audio question. So once again, if you have a question, you can just write me feedback@gamingsteve.com. If an audio question, try to keep it around 30 seconds or less. And otherwise, just write me your question. And with that, let's get to the first audio question from Patrick.
Steve, how about that Duke Nukem Forever teaser? Pretty interesting, eh? Gotta love coincidences. Anyway, on to my question. What are your thoughts on Wii Fit? Do you think that it'll see the same success that it has seen in Japan, or is the Japanese health craze the only thing that's driving sales? Thanks, as always.
Hey, Patrick. So thanks for the question. Will the Wii Fit be a big hit in the United States? Yes. Okay, next question. No. Yeah, no, seriously, it's going to be a huge hit. Right now, there's a big fitness boom going on in Japan, so the Wii Fit was a big deal, very much like there was a big fitness boom here in the United States in the 80s, for anyone who remembers. But no, the Wii Fit, it's going to do great. It's going to go on every single every single talk show. You're going to hear about it on Today's Show. You're going to be seeing press pieces on it. And you know why? It's because it can it can go to everyone, you know? That's the problem right now. It's like, if you talk about the PlayStation 3 or you talk about the Xbox 360, it's sort of a niche market. And it's sort of like, okay, if we're running that piece, we have to run it like in the technology section, or we have to run it like in our gift-giving guide, or, you know, something like that. It's sort of, it just falls into sort of a small area. The Wii was very brilliant because now it falls into, okay, it's becoming a cultural phenomenon. It was even listed in Entertainment Weekly, like had the, like, you know, the cultural zeitgeist of like all the items that people were talking about. And it was listed as like, you know, the Wii was actually listed in Entertainment Weekly. So you have something like Wii Fitness. This can go as a regular news story. This could go under health and fitness. This can go anywhere. So you're going to hear about it. It's, you know, it's something unique. It's something fun. And more importantly, it's one more way that you can show that video games are good for you. And something else is that I've been talking to a lot of my friends, and a lot of my friends are older. They're in their 30s, maybe even in their 40s, and a lot of them have kids, and a lot of them already have a 360. And they'll say to me, you know, or PS3, but most 360, and they'll say, hey, do you think I should buy a Wii? And I tell them, and I'll say, yeah, you know, the Wii's really good. It's got a couple of, like, unique games. You know, it's obviously a lot of fun. You can play it with your wife or other people in your, you know, household that might not be game players. Little kids can play it really, really easily. That's, like, a big plus in my book. And then I tell them about, like, Zack and Wiki, which is, like, a really fun puzzle game. You know, a few other games that are out just for the Wii. And then finally I'll say, oh, and no, and they're coming up with this game in a few months called Wii Fitness, is where it's a balance board that you can stand on, and you can sort of do exercise, and it tracks, like, you know, how you're doing. And I swear to God, every time I say this, their eyes light up and they go, oh my God, I'm buying that. You know why? Because people, I like to exercise. I love exercise. I've been doing my whole life. I just can't get enough of it. But, you know, quite frankly, if I'm sitting there on the, you know, on the bicycle, it's boring. You know, I'm watching something on my iPod. I'm watching something on TV on my DVR or something like that. But I'm looking forward to it because if I could play games and use the Wii board and exercise, oh man, I'm doing that right away. And even for, and it's good for older people, like Dance Dance Revolution, which is very popular. I know a lot of people, a lot of my developer friends, they love it. They have, like, contests, they play it all the time. It's a great way to lose weight. But, you know, Dance Dance Revolution, it takes a lot of coordination. It's not good for your knees. It's definitely, if you're older, there's no way you can do it. If you have bad knees, you cannot use Dance Dance Revolution, and it's just seen as a much older. You have Wii Fitness, which is like this little balance board where you can just stand there and then you just balance, and using your muscles is actually very difficult. Older people can use it, people in nursing homes. And you think that's a small population? Let me tell you, if every single nursing home in America bought one Wii, that would probably sell several million copies. They would sell a lot. They would sell quite a few, especially in retirement communities, nursing homes, all over the place. And I'm seeing that happen. I tell you, when I visit some of my parents' friends and stuff, you know, at these retirement communities in Florida, they have Wiis. And I can tell you this much. They don't have any 360s there. They don't have any PlayStations. I'll tell you that much. I don't see many 60, 70-year-olds playing with those. But when I start seeing Wiis appear in those age groups, you know that they're really, really being successful and marketing this thing unlike anything else. It is not even a video game system. I mean, it is actually starting to transform itself into an interactive medium that can be used in multiple ways. And this has sort of been the holy grail for gaming. And I know a lot of fanboys and people that are hardcore gamers, they absolutely hate Nintendo, and they hate it that this is happening. But you know what? Get used to it. You know, I still remember when I was in the internet and AOL, this was like back in late 80s, early 90s, AOL users were finally allowed to access the internet. And back then, the internet consisted of like 10 people. Seriously, there was so few people on the internet. So I used to go to a bulletin board because we didn't have websites back then. I'd read every single message on the bulletin board for like 15 bulletin boards in like an hour because there was just no one was on it. It was just like Microsoft employees, government employees, military people, and a few colleges, and that's it. They let AOL people in, and it was like the floodgates opened. All these normal people with bad manners were coming in, and they're messing up our perfect little internet, and then it just got bigger and bigger and bigger to where it is now. Same thing. It's like, oh, now all these old people and these normal people are playing our games. and they're making hardcore games. They don't understand, you know, Halo 3 is a real game and Crysis is a real game. This Wii Fitness isn't a real game. And you know what? Wii Fitness, Guitar Hero, all similar games. They're selling millions of copies. They're making hundreds and millions of dollars. In Guitar Hero's case, billions of dollars for their companies. This is the future, whether you want it or not. And in a weird way, it's a good thing. It's one of those catch-22s. Like, people wanted gaming to become more popular. Now it's become popular. Unfortunately, it's become popular in ways they didn't quite expect. Anyhow, yes, that was a long answer. But yeah, Wii Fitness is going to be a huge hit. Next question.
It's Cobber from the forums down here in Australia. My question is in the same vein of the one you asked in episode 66, but this time it's for the Wii Virtual Console. Which game would you like to see released? And
how come?
And while at it, I guess I would like to say the game I'd choose would be AFL for the Nintendo Entertainment System, simply because back in the day in Australia, every single person who had an NES had AFL, and we all loved the game, and exactly seeing it was probably the first game I ever saw with voice in it. Thank you very much, and goodbye.
All right, Cobra, that's a messed up question. You ever do that again, or anyone does that, I will not play your question, all right? I'll give you an exception this time, but don't do that again. So what game will I want to see for the Wii Virtual Console? You know, I'm not like a huge – I have so many games to play. I have so many that I don't really play it that much. I just don't play older games. You know, even Pac-Man, things like that, I just don't. I don't have enough time to play the games I want to play. And I don't, you know, in my priority list, those are unfortunately below anything I really want. And I'd rather play the actual arcade consoles if I had my choice. But, you know, I put together a small list, Earthbound. A 1994 game for the Super Nintendo. Obviously, a lot of people have heard of this game. Not a lot of people have played it. It's a great role-playing game. I would love for this thing to come out. Star Tropics. Fantastic game. Came out in 1990 for the Nintendo. It's very similar to Zelda. If you could find this game, and it's very easy to find these games for Nintendo, piece of cake, you can find Star Tropics. It's very reminiscent of sort of the Zelda gameplay. It's a fun game. It's very Americanized, which is you know, which is rare for these type of games. Great game. I wish that would come out. Snake, Rattle, and Roll. It's one of the very first platformers ever made, 3D platformers ever made. It came out in 1990. It was made by Rare, one of their first games from the Nintendo. Another great game. Kind of a weird, esoteric kind of game where you're playing the snake, but it's fun. I enjoyed it quite a bit. And then finally, Chrono Trigger. You know, classic. Some people have rated this the greatest role-playing game ever made for any console, period. Came out in 1995 for the Super Nintendo. Not a lot of people have played it. You know, it's one of those games, like, you hear about it and people talk about it, but it's been almost 13 years now since that game's come out. So, you know, it's there's a lot of gamers out there who would probably like to play this game. Unfortunately, it is so old school. I don't know if this would really translate so well. I think this game would actually do real well for sort of an update. But then again, it is sort of a masterpiece in its own right, so who knows. But that's a sort of a quick list of games. I thought I actually heard Star Tropics was coming out for the Wii Virtual Console. I might be wrong on that, but I think I read something about that. But yeah, that's a good game. I never played the sequel, but you know, any four of those games, seriously, just pick them up, find them. There's ways of getting them, if you know what I mean, if you really want to give them a try. But let's get to my next question.
Hi, Gaming Steve. This is Daniel from Utah. First up, I love your show. I'm glad that you're back, so keep it up. Secondly, I want to talk on your last podcast. You mentioned that the PC market is shrinking in video games, and you, like a lot of reporters, are blaming this on consoles. I was curious what your thoughts were in regards to the fact that a lot of these games that have come out and flop lately, like Vanguard, Saga of Heroes, or Crysis, even though there are other reasons contributing to it, are focusing so much on graphics that a lot of times the gameplay is lacking. You even mentioned that in Mass Effect, although the story obviously makes up for it in some areas. Whereas a lot of the games that have done very, very well in the last couple of years, like World of Warcraft, or pretty much any game released for the DS or the Wii, are proving that graphics don't really matter if you come through with good gameplay. And so I was curious if it might be a symptom more of the urge to push the envelope in a market where pushing the envelope means having to upgrade your system, which means each game comes with a $1,000 price tag. So, love your show. Keep it up.
Hey, Daniel from Utah. That is an insanely complex question. I could do 10 hours of show on that question alone for a week, and I still would not answer it. So I kind of try to put together my thoughts here and sort of answer that. And my other two questions, I kind of answered what you were saying a little bit, especially the one on the Wii Fitness. But here, first of all, let's talk a little bit about PC games. PC games are always going to be around. They're not going anywhere. But what's happening right now is that PC games, they used to be sort of at their peak, and the way you would use a PC, you know, it was very big into role-playing games, it was very big into first-person shooters. Right now, it's very, very big into MMOs, but unfortunately, as the game consoles are getting more and more sophisticated, you know, it used to be is that the only way you can play a first-person shooter is that you had to do it on a PC, and with the advent of Halo, that sort of started the trend of, like, you don't need to do that anymore, and the biggest the most obvious example of this is BioShock. BioShock for the Xbox 360 and for the PC. I myself played it on the PC. I have a lot of friends. They have very powerful PCs. And every single person I spoke to bought the Xbox 360 version. And I asked them why. They said, first of all, because of the achievements. And second of all, because they have a really good setup. A lot of people have HD TVs. They look great. And you know what? There was no real difference. You know, they said the game looked almost identical on their 360 as it does on the PC. And more importantly, they're going to know it works on their 360. I mean, I don't know how many times I get a game, I install it on my PC, I have to twiddle around with it, I have to fool around with the settings, I have to see how many, you know, run fraps and see how many frames per second I'm getting just to make sure it's like really set to the best settings possible. And you know what? It's a pain in the neck. Of course, yes, the keyboard controller and mouse is much better than the mouse pad, the gamepad, but at the same time, if you have dollars to donuts, you have almost the exact same game, or in many cases, the exact same game on your console system, people are going to use the console system. So you're just seeing people, you know, more people are just going to the consoles because it's just, you know, if you can have the same experience, they're going to go on the consoles. Another thing is that, you know, PC games right now, they're changing. As I said, it's like the PC and the old days, first-person shooters would be just the realm of the PC. You know what? What we're seeing with, you know, Unreal Tournament and Crysis is that this is no longer turning true. And they're just really, they can't survive without having to come out with a port, both, you know, for their games. And this actually is kind of a big deal, and I'll tell you why. The number one driving force for first-person shooters in this arena is actually the technology. And I'll tell you why. Like with Crysis, is what they'll do is, you know, they'll spend a ton of time and money on developing these engines, and then they'll sell these engines for like $1 million. You know, it used to be like $100,000 for like the Lithtech engine. Then it would be like $250,000 for like, you know, like the Doom engine. Now they're like $500,000, $1 million for Crysis. You know, so if you want to go out and say you want to build a first-person shooter, and you know, you just want to build a first-person shooter, you just want to you know, tell an exciting story. You don't want to rewrite the book here or go too crazy. So they'll go to someone like, you know, Crytek. They'll license their engine. They'll have all their tools, have their support, and then they can build their game, and they don't have to worry about all of that. And that's where these guys make their money, and that's why these games are often financed, and that's why you often hear, especially with, you know, first-person shooters, it's all about the polygons. It's all about how good the games look, and it's all about, oh, our game is this much more realistic than that game. And usually the gameplay is a far distant second to the actual look and feel and amazingness of the first-person shooter. But you know, after you see what happened with the BioShock, and you saw what happened with Crysis, and, you know, even games like Halo 3, which did not have the greatest graphics on Earth, you know, had pretty good graphics, and you're starting to see this, it's like, wow, you know what? Maybe, heaven forbid, a really interesting story and a good IP will, you know, supersede amazing, fantastic graphics. And maybe we can come out with a game on the 360 and PlayStation 3 and then port it onto the PC. which is going to happen more and more. Even look, Tiberium, you know, the recently announced first-person shooter in the Command & Conquer world, that's not a coincidence. And, you know, it's going to come out for the consoles as well as the PC because they see the writing on the wall. They're seeing, you know what, I've said this over and over again in this podcast, people want to make money. And they're saying, you know, people are going to notice BioShock has sold 2 million copies. It has made a ton of money for Take-Two. And, you know, and even the Orange Box, although it's not selling phenomenally well, you know, it was getting really good press, and people are starting to go through that, you know, first-person shooter phase. People want, you know, these type of games, and Portal and all these other games are getting really good press. You know, they're going to jump on the bandwagon. They're going to want to get their game out, and they're going to want to give people something to play. So, you know, that's kind of where we're going. It's like the PC gaming will never die, but console gaming, as it gets better and better, and there's less of, you know, especially with what's high definition, that sort of changed everything. Once high definition came out, forget it. You know, it's, there's, the games look just as good, if not better, especially if you have, you know, a 50-inch HD TV that you spent all this money on, and you just have, you know, a 360 there, and you can just plop in a game and know that it's going to run great, and your friends can watch you play it, and you can play it in your dorm room, or you can play it somewhere with your friends watching you. You're going to do that. It's just that simple. It's a lot more fun. So, again, I can go on and on. I'm going to end this now, but, you know, I don't think PC games are never going to die. You know, the MMOs right now are really keeping PC games alive. You know, casual games are going to keep them alive. You know, browser-based games, that's the next big thing, and I'm actually going to probably be covering that a little bit more in the show, because browser-based games, they're getting bigger, they're getting stronger, they're getting more sophisticated. You're going to see games that used to, you know, games that you used to be able to play on your PC, you can now just play in your browser, you know, and, you know, as browser technology continues to get better and better, and you're going to start seeing that become more relevant. So PCs will always be around. It's just consoles are just, you know, they're taking over, where the PCs, they're sort of the PCs are the groundbreakers, and the consoles are the mass market. It's just that simple. So next up, I have, that's it for audio questions. I have a ton of regular questions. Let's see how I'm running here on time. I'm pretty good. I'll get as many as I can. I'm going to go a little faster instead of going on forever as I usually do. Dear Steve, I have a question for you to answer. Your near rant on Lord of the Rings Online in the show from the 18th has got me nearly wanting to give the game a whirl, but I've got a question that might cause me not to be able to play it. That is, I've got Hughes.net satellite internet. I'm curious is, what is your knowledge? Would the game be playable for me? So he has actually two questions. First question is, will he be able to play it on satellite? Maybe. Satellite is bad because it has a bad latency. Dial-ups usually have a latency of about 150 to 300 milliseconds, which is about the most you'd ever really want, and that's even pretty high, believe it or not, especially for first-person shooters. Like professional game players, believe it or not, move. So they're closer. They move to like places like Texas. So they're actually closer to where the game servers are, and they're closer in the middle of the country so that they have as low latency as possible. Yes, they are that insane. With satellite, you have something like a 400 to 500 millisecond or more latency. It might not sound like a lot, but it's a lot. It's a fair amount. It's impossible to play a first-person shooter with that. An MMO, maybe. And the problem, I can't imagine. There's going to definitely be delay with the voice chat, especially in Lord of the Rings Online. You're just going to have a delay. There's no way around it. I would just say give it a try, because your second question is, is there a free trial for the game that doesn't actually involve purchasing the game beforehand? And yeah, every game pretty much has a free trial out there. Astron's Call, which is no longer around, let's see. D&D Online, 7 days. EVE Online, 14 free days. EverQuest 2, 7 free days. Lord of the Rings Online, 7 days. Yes, you get the, you can download the client to play it for free right now for 7 days. Star Wars Galaxies has 10 days. World of Warcraft, you even get like 10 free days. Burning Crusade, you get 10 free games. Every single game has it, so just take a look out there. Actually, it was very easy to find, to be honest with you. If you just go to Lord of the Rings Online, just type in Lord of the Rings Online, free trial, poof, it'll pop up. You can download it and give it a try and see if you like it, see how it plays. And another good thing to do, especially for games like Crysis, is that if you have a computer and you're not sure you can play the game or run it, download the trial and give it a whirl. You know, if Crysis plays well on your computer as a demo, then it'll probably, you know, the real game will play fine too. So that's a good way to test out your system. And then finally, a little bit of suggestion. If you have, and it sounds like you already have satellite internet, there's no way around that, I would say look at WiMAX or EVDO. EVDO is a terrestrial signal. It's a terrestrial radio internet. That's the internet. EVDO cards, those are the ones that you plug in your computer and actually uses your wire. It actually uses your cell phone internet. It's like cell phone internet service. So like you would go, you know, Sprint or AT&T or Verizon, whoever. It's not that cheap. It's definitely not as cheap as cable. But, you know, that's the best bet. Just go to cable, okay? That's, you know, or Verizon for Vios, which is phenomenally fast. And it's not that expensive. It's going to cost you less than EVDO. It has to be in your area, but there you go. That's my best guess for you is download a trial, give it a try, see if it's playable. If not, you know, try to find something else. Or if worse comes to worse, you know, use a wireless card and leech off one of your neighbors illegally. You didn't hear that from me. Next up, I have Chad. He wrote me, like to hear you discuss the issue of the lack of four-player split-screen games with system linking capabilities that run the Xbox and the Xbox 360. I'm a guy who's regularly holding 4-on-4 Halo CE and now Halo 3 events in my house for years now, and it wasn't until Halo 3 that came out that we finally had a good alternative to our Halo CE nights. You go on and on about this. So, yes, Chad, why is four-player split-screen games no longer being made? Well, a couple reasons. One is that Xbox 360 wants you to buy Live. So, once again, there's a financial reason in there. You know, they want you to use the Live service. Second of all, split-screen is a pain to implement, okay? You know, it's not that easy to do. In fact, developers sort of hate it, at least the ones I know who used to do it. And the reason is, you know, it's like, think about it. It's like you have all this graphic powerhouse going on and using every ounce of the computer or your console to make the screen actually, you know, to actually draw the screen and render it. So now you have to split that rendering time up into four quadrants. So they have to do all these crazy tricks. They have to use like low resolution, textures. It's just a pain. A long story short is like they basically have to design the game twice. They have to design the game to run like full screen single player, and then they have to design the game to run like tiny. So it runs like, you know, in four by four or something like that. So it's a pain. Then you have something like, oh, the internet or Live, and it's just a lot easier to implement comparatively. The reason is because, you know, Microsoft will give you tools. They'll give you tools that will help you actually use the Live service because it goes through their system. So they give, you know, these things called APIs. They give them to all the developers and they say, here, you want to use internet and you want to use our service and you want to have, you know, one server talk to another. Here's our tools to our system. You just have to tie into it and voila, it works. So yeah, that's a heck of a lot easier to implement. And more importantly, people like it. You know, it sells. People like co-op play. I love co-op play. And, you know, the split screen was sort of a convention at the time because you couldn't use the internet. It sort of was a placeholder. It's like, you know, if you wanted to play multiplayer in the old days, you know, the only way you could really do it is that you take all the, you know, you take all your game systems and you hook them up and you can play together. I'm talking about consoles now, or you did a split screen, you know, like GoldenEye or something, you know, that was it. There was no other way of doing it. But nowadays with the internet and, you know, in multiplayer gaming is just becoming a fact of life. You know, I think Halo 3 might be one of the very last split screen games you'll ever play, period. I think it's just going to go the way of the dinosaur. And I wish I could tell you otherwise, but there's really no incentive for them to do it. I know you say here is that your friends, like seven of your friends were dying to buy Orange Box and play Team Fortress 2. And then we found out it didn't have split screen. You said no, and you guys didn't buy it, or you bought it and returned it. Well, you know what? It's still the most, you know, like Team Fortress 2 is the most popular multiplayer game around. So I don't think it's hurting it. And, you know, like if that was hurting it and if people wanted it, they'd put it in. But I'm sorry. I just don't think you're going to be seeing it much, if any more, period. You know what I'd recommend? Have your friends all bring over their 360s and their TVs. TVs are so cheap now, man. Or just get computer monitors. Seriously, computer monitors are so cheap. Just buy a whole bunch of computer monitors. You could get a ton for less than a really nice HDTV and set up a nice little LAN room in your house. I have a friend of mine. He has a pretty big room, and he just has that. He has all these computer monitors, and he does it so you can just switch and you can play multiplayer games. You're not facing each other. You're all facing the wall. It's kind of weird, but it works. And, you know, it's one way to do it. Sorry, man. Hey, Steve, you mentioned your recent podcast. You recently enjoyed playing Team Fortress 2, as many people do. I was wondering which class you enjoy playing the most. Just a guess, I would peg you as an engineer. Love your show, blah, blah, blah. Mark. Actually, it's a Kapow Sam. How you doing? Yeah, I, believe it or not, don't really love the engineer. I know, it sounds like I would. No, my favorite is the heavy. I love the heavy. I like playing classes that can just dish out massive damage. I love, like, the Scrapper in City of Heroes, my favorite class. Love the Scrapper. I love the Champion of Lord of the Rings Online. World of Warcraft. Wow, there we go. I played a Shaman. I really liked the Shaman quite a bit. Because they just sort of had a little bit of everything. They were just a master of all traits. Those are kind of type of characters I like to play. So the heavy is probably my favorite, especially if you get up really high and you can just snipe everyone, which leads to my second one, the sniper. I do enjoy the sniper, but the sniper always turns into a battle between you and the other snipers on the team, and you spend more time sniping each other than you do sniping people running around, and that little scout is such a pain in the neck to get anyhow. And then finally, the medic. I kind of like the medic a lot. You know, first you get to help people out, and people, you know, sometimes you just feel like helping. You just feel like being part of the team, and there's no one better than the medic. I have tried the engineer. You know, the problem with the engineer is, like, you're just so dependent upon communication with the other players. And if you're playing these random games, as I don't think I've ever played with friends of mine, really, in Team Fortress 2, is, you know, you're just playing with random people. It's hard. It's hard to be an effective engineer because the other people might have ideas. But I can imagine if you're playing with friends or in a clan, an engineer would be fantastic. So that's sort of, you know, you can be heavy. You can just go with random people and everyone loves you. But I love all the classes. Spy's fun. Everything's fun. It's just sort of like whatever. It's like ice cream flavors, you know. I like a whole bunch of ice cream, just whatever mood I'm in. But normally the heavy is probably the most. Next up, I got Keith. Keith writes me, "Hey, man, what the hell ever happened to Space Wing Commander and Freelancer games?" That's a good question. I have no idea. You know what? You're right. It was kind of weird. It was like Wing Commander. I remember the movie came out, that horrible movie. Was it like 1999? And then it just disappeared, totally fell off the face of the earth. I did some research. I was looking around trying to find out, like, what happened to Wing Commander and Freelancer. I couldn't find anything. There was nothing. It was just like they just died. They just stopped making them. And I am not even sure why. It could be a couple of reasons. Well, the Wing Commander games did sort of get oversaturated. It was Origins. They were firing people. People were let go. It could be that, you know, they were refocusing their efforts, and they probably did an assessment, especially right around when those games stopped being made. It's by EA. It's like Lord of the Rings came out, and they really putting all their time and money into big market things like Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter. And in fact, you know, since those movies ended and since they stopped putting out those games, EA's bottom line has actually hurt quite a bit, because they just, you know, they had these fantastic franchises they were milking for years. So, you know, again, it could just been that they went through all their intellectual properties. They went down the list. Those were at the top, and they had their sports games and so forth, you know, and then they had their Maxis games and they had the Sims and everything. And then those just came at the bottom of the list, and they had to cut something, and those were just weren't pulling in the money. And then, finally, you said, the second question is, there was a big rant from a former Harmonix employee who said that multi-platform games will always look better on the 360 versus the PS3 due to the PS3's architecture not being beneficial to developers. How true is this? Yeah, this actually is an interesting rant. You should check it out. It's at jbooth.blogspot.com. It's that you can read the whole rant. It's pretty easy. Just write in Harmonix rant PlayStation 3 and Google, and I'm sure this thing will come up. He goes into a lot of details as to why the PlayStation 3 just can't do as much as the Xbox 360. And he is actually right. The Xbox 360, it comes down to this. This is what I know from my developer friends, is that the Xbox 360 is just easier to develop on. It's just a simpler platform right now. There's a lot more tool sets out. It develops very similar to the way PC develops, which a lot of people are already familiar with. The Xbox 360, it's just a more familiar and faster platform. The PlayStation 3, although it's more powerful, is a lot more esoteric, and it requires a lot more coding and requires a lot more balancing than the Xbox 360. So now, why does this matter? What does this mean? Very simple, is that when they're developing a game for multi-platform, is that they have to come out with the game quickly. You know, they need to test it, they need to test out concepts, they need to develop the engine, they need to do it as quickly as possible. And if you have two platforms, and if one is easier to develop on than the other, that's the platform they're going to develop on. So what's happening a lot of times is that they're developing their core games, if they're doing a multi-platform game, on the Xbox 360. Because it's just faster to develop on. It doesn't mean the PlayStation 3 is worse than the Xbox 360. It just means is that what's happening is that the Xbox is becoming the initial platform development choice, and then the PlayStation 3 is becoming sort of the indirect port. So they'll optimize it and sort of spend their time on the Xbox 360, and then they'll sort of convert it when they make it and upscale it when they make the PlayStation 3 version. This is why the PlayStation 3 games that are exclusives they look so fantastic. And there's a reason for that. It's because they're only developing for one system, they're spending all their time on that system. So, yeah, it's not a coincidence that a lot of these games usually end up looking much better. They have the time, the resources, because they know this has to work on this system and only the system. So we don't have to worry about porting it. We don't have to worry about doing anything fancy on it. So they'll spend their time to make sure that their game works correctly on the PlayStation 3. And you'll notice that trend is that any of these games that are just PlayStation 3 exclusives, they look fantastic. And that's because the dev team is spending all their time on that platform and nothing but that platform. But if you have anything that's multiplayer, you know, I guarantee you 9 times out of 10 that they're going to be developing that thing on the Xbox 360 first, and then they're going to be moving it to PlayStation 3. So they're not going to be using the full graphics capability and the power that a PlayStation 3 has. And more importantly, until they start having some development tools and they start having code that's pre-written and libraries that they can just plug into, which isn't going to be around for another few years, the PlayStation 3 games are probably, they're going to suffer. And that can happen a lot of ways. Graphics is one of them, because, you know, they'll have to re-render everything and make it, you know, that much better for the PlayStation 3. And it's just, you know, then they have to, okay, the graphics are better, but then the pipes are smaller, so we have to worry about the draw times. Blu-ray is slower, so we have to worry about loading. But yet, you know, there's a lot of these little crazy things. I can go on about this for a while, but that's really the gist right there. And don't even tell me about the Wii, because then they take them and they totally destroy them for the Wiis. Until the developers start getting very serious and realizing that the Wii, you know, cannot handle the same type of graphics or memory or anything that the other consoles have. They have to make almost 3 systems, 3 different games, which, by the way, developers hate the Wii. A lot of them really do. They totally mess them up. I think I talked about this in the last shows. They almost wish secretly it did not exist, because now they have to develop for like a medium platform for the Xbox 360, a very powerful platform, the PlayStation 3, and then a crappy platform from a developer point of view is the Wii. And they don't want to do that. You know, they just wish they could develop for 2 or 1 platform. And now they have to develop an entirely unique game for the Wii. That's why a lot of people thought it was going to fail. They said developers didn't want to do this. And they still don't want to do it, but they have to, because it's just too popular. So there's sort of my take on why that he went off on that, and he was talking about that in his blog. So there you go. Next up, I have Shelby from New Zealand wrote, is my question, what sites do you trust to give accurate reviews of games? I noticed you mentioned Yahtzee in your latest podcast. I think he's one of the most honest reviewers out there. Any other sites that you have absolute faith in not to be sellouts? As you mentioned in your last podcast, you'd like to see more board games come to Xbox Live Arcade, and how Talisman is already in development. I was just wondering if you'd ever see deep strategy games like Axis and Allies come to Arcade. So, first question. What other people? Yahtzee is probably the best I've ever seen because he tells it like it is. And I've never really seen a reporter do it the way he does it. And more importantly, he and I think the same ways. I kind of knew, you know, like, for instance, movie reviews, Roger Ebert, he and I just have almost the exact same tastes in movies. So anything he likes, there's probably a 98% chance I'll like. One of my friends, same thing. Like, he and I have almost the exact same taste. So if he sees something and recommends it, I'll see it, etc. My brother and I have the same taste in movies, things like that. So really, it comes down to that. It's like, who seems to have the same taste? But as soon as I saw him with his glowing review of Psychonauts, and he was touching on things, his review of Bioshock and how it was a blatant, dumbed-down ripoff of System Shock 2, I knew that pretty much whatever this guy says, I'll probably 98% of the time agree with him. With that being said, believe it or not, and you probably won't like this, but GameSpot, they have their issues, but especially I like their video reviews, is they do tell it like there is. They actually will point out the flaws of a game. They will point out the, you know, the good points of a game, and I kind of ignore the number. I try to always do that now, and I just read it. But that's sort of it, to be honest. And game reviews are terrible. You know, it's like the scores are always inflated. You know, it's just too hard to get an accurate reading. You know, I go to Metacritic and Game Rankings, and I just read every single review, and I just sort of take it with a grain of salt. I wish there was someone else out there that I could really trust. And then, what other board games would I like? What other would I see, like Axis and Allies, come to Live Arcade? I don't think it's going to happen. You know, unfortunately, Axis and Allies and really deep strategy games that take hours to play, you're not going to see come to arcade. First of all, they're already being developed, and they're going to come out for web browsers, because those are turn-based games anyhow, so they're perfect. You can take a turn, you can, you know, wait, someone else could take a turn. So those games that really are lend themselves to that. You know, you have like Uno, or these games that are very common that a lot of people know how to play, and they're very quick. That's going to be on Xbox Live Arcade. Those are the games you're going to see there. Talisman's a weird one. Even I'm kind of stunned that they're coming out with that, because, first of all, it's kind of a very long game. And second of all, it's a really weird esoteric game that I don't know how many people know about. But, hey, I'm happy they're coming out with it, because I love that game. So I think that will probably be the most complex game you see on Xbox Live Arcade for quite some time. Next up, I got Tom, and he writes, "Hey, Steve, for the last few months you say the Wii is not available in North America, but in Europe, Belgium, you can find it almost in every shop for some months now. I find this quite strange. Any explanation? Thanks for the podcast, Tom." Good luck finding it anywhere in America. It's totally impossible. And, yeah, I have been hearing that. A lot of people write me, go, "Yeah, I can find it here in Europe, no problem." Well, first of all, it's not no problem. I have had some people, like in the UK, write me, say it's kind of tricky to find. I think it kind of comes and goes in waves. And in Japan, it's also kind of hard to find. The thing with America is, first of all, the demand here is crazy. I don't know why. It just clicked. You know, it just is right now. It is clicking. The same way like the Xbox 360. The demand for an Xbox 360 initially when it came out, compared to Europe or especially Japan, obviously, is monstrous. They just love it here. It's just for whatever reason. The other big reason is why it's so hard to find is the distribution channels. You know, if you go somewhere, well, a lot of European countries, it's very simple. They're smaller. There's a lot less places you have to distribute the game. There's a lot more cities where most people live. You know, it's just a lot easier to get the actual units into stores and locations. You know, if they ship it to the UK, there's just not as many places they have to get it to. You know, it's just not as many ports. The United States and Japan, same thing. The United States is a big country. You know, it's, first of all, it's physically very large. There's a ton of cities all over the place. The distribution channels are immense. I mean, you have something like, GameStop. They have 5,000 stores. I realize that's worldwide, but they have so many stores. You know, they have to get Wii's out to every single store in the United States. You know, and they're only one, you know, that's only one person. You got Walmart, you got Target, you got all these people. And they have to get not just one or two, but they have to make sure if they have, you know, we'll just say off the top of my head, if they have 1,000 stores, You know, 1,000 Wii's isn't going to cut it. 10,000 Wii's isn't going to cut it. You know, they're going to want 100,000 Wii's a week, you know, so they can get an adequate supply to all of their stores throughout the entire country. And that's just not happening, you know. And there's just too many distribution channels in the United States. And this happens quite a bit. That's why often you'll go somewhere like in the old days, I don't know if they really do this anymore, they'll do initial launches of systems like Nintendo did this with the NES. They launch it in only really densely populated places like New York City, because, you know, they can release something in New York City where there's like 8+ million people in a very small area, and they can reach a huge amount of people. You know, it's just not the same when you go to Wyoming and there's like 500,000 people in the entire state of Wyoming. You know, they're just not going to be able to hit the same amount of people. You know, they can drop it in literally 5 stores in Manhattan, and you can hit millions of people in a single day. So, you know, that's really the biggest problem, is they just, one, there's a ridiculous demand for the Wii, and two, it's just hard. The United States is just, it's just a much harder, more complex structure. You know, the only thing I can think of, you know, the only place it's a little bit more complex and a lot more complex, you have places like, India, Russia, obviously, because it's just beyond monstrous, China, for lots of reasons. You know, any place that's physically large starts getting these issues. But this is not uncommon. This is very, you know, for the Wii, you're starting to see it emphasized, but this happens all the time. This happens with cars in the United States. This happens with anything that's hot. It's just you can't seem to find it in certain places because they just can't get it out. So there's the quick reason. If you have it in the UK, I wish I was there, because we can't find it anywhere in the US. Next, I have a D&D person. I had a lot of people come over since I had all those people from the WotC, which is the Coast Come. So I got a whole bunch of role players I'm pretty excited about. So first of all, he wrote, "What are your thoughts of 4th edition so far, especially the D&D Insider part?" And this is from Mayo Polo from Berlin, Germany. 4th edition, I've seen the previews. I really like it. And again, I think this, you're going to be seeing more and more role-playing games, pen and paper games, just traditional games, board games, games you just never really expected to come over to the world of video games. It's not even the world of video games. People are like, oh, it's video games. No, as I said before, interactive entertainment. It's a way for people to play these games together, you know, remotely, that they just couldn't do before, whether it's on a console or on a computer or whatever have you. You know, it's like massively multiplayer gaming. And now, you know, the boundaries of, you know, getting people together is getting easier and easier, especially, you know, if you have voice over IP, you know, in a few more years, everyone's going to have video. It's like, you know, there's really no reason why, you know, yes, it's definitely more fun to do these things in person, but, you know, the same ways that people used to, you know, not think about, well, telephone, who's going to want to do that? Who's going to want to pick up a phone and talk to someone? I'd much rather meet them, you know, like in the local pub or in the town square and talk to them. I mean, these were discussions people used to have in the early 1900s, you know, oh, the telephone, it's so weird, you're talking to a box, who wants to do that? Well, obviously, it's become the way that's normal. And right now, unfortunately, I think we're going to see that happening more and more with these games. Actually, I'm excited about it because I love playing these games, and just being able to play board games in D&D any way, shape, or form, is, you know, in person, over the internet, whatever, is good. And second question I actually answered already. And lastly, why do you think D&D Online was such a failure and didn't manage to attract the masses of people that the pen and paper version has? Thanks in advance. D&D Online stunk, which is really unbelievable because it's by the same guys who did Lord of the Rings Online. Yeah, because they tried too hard to make it exactly like the actual game. You have a dungeon, you have the dungeon master, they took the actual rules. They shouldn't have done that. They should have just taken the game, taken the world, you know, had the same monsters, you know, just go through the monster manual, kind of, you know, do like what Neverwinter Nights does, you know, like, or what they did with Lord of the Rings Online. It's like, just make a regular, massively multiplayer MMO, you know, just make a regular game and use the D&D world and settings and monsters as, you know, as what the world is, you know, going to consist of, you know, populated with those experiences. They didn't, you know, they made it exactly like playing D&D, which means you get to play the same adventure 100 times, which is boring. No one wants to do that. I really don't know what the heck they were thinking. It was one of those things that maybe it sounded good on paper, but It stinks, to be honest. They should just take what they did with Lord of the Rings Online and reskin it with D&D, and that would be great, because it plays, I say this, Lord of the Rings Online, it plays just like D&D. It really does. You have all these little group experiences. You have tons of quests. You go with 4 people, 5 people, no problem. You can do all these little fellowship quests just like you do with a little group in D&D. What's the difference? I really don't see one. So, you know, it's a shame, too, because this is really, it hurt their brand. I just had a meeting with a friend of mine last week who writes games for a living. He's actually a game developer for collectible card games. This is all he does. And he works a lot with Wizards of the Coast. And he was saying that, you know, the Wizards guys were not, they were not happy with D&D Online. It hurt their brand. It hurt their, you know, it hurt them in a lot of ways they didn't expect. They thought, you know, they saw all the benefits, like, oh, this is great. You know, MMOs are so popular. But at the same time, if you have a poorly executed one, it can really mess you up. So let's see, I'll kind of go through the next ones kind of quick. Ben from Boston wrote me, I was wondering if you'd give me some impressions of Final Fantasy 12 on this week's show. It was and still is, since I haven't finished it, my favorite game from 2006. I'm very interested in your opinion of the game since the show was on break when the game came out, and I thought maybe you could say a few words about it. Thanks for the feedback. Talk to you soon. Ben from Boston. Yeah, Final Fantasy XII was a weird game. I love the combat. The combat felt like a massively multiplayer game. I really enjoyed the combat system. I just thought that was done very well. I love the way you had that like a language system in there, like the if then statements, sort of like loose programming. That was great. The story stunk. I fell asleep, like, sometimes. I'd be, like, wandering around, and you know, I don't know what they were doing. It's, like, this all these weird characters, and it just, like, was just so fanciful. I'll be honest, I didn't finish it. I played it for quite some time, and I was just waiting for it to sort of, like, wrap me up and take me into the game. I just couldn't get involved. I mean, it just was not that interesting, and unfortunately, you know, after a while, the combat, as much fun as it is, you do combat for 20 hours, the same type. And yeah, you know, you kind of need a good story to keep it going. You know, I will take a good story over good play mechanics anytime. And this had the opposite. So that was my take. I will probably try to give it another try later. But, you know, it just did not do it for me. It was just too weird. Sorry. I wish I had more nice things to say about it, but love the combat system. Next up, I have Lucas, who wrote me, hey, Steve, I had a question. First, thanks for turning me into Lord of the Rings Online. I love it. Second question is, what would you consider to be the top 5 or 10 tips when starting off in the game? I don't want to get super involved and find out I messed up somewhere along the way and have to start over. Thanks for the advice, Jacob. Very simple. I can give you some examples of things you should do if you want to try out Lord of the Rings Online. Try out all the classes. It doesn't take you very long. Level 10 is where the game starts to get interesting. It won't take you that long to get to level 5. Or 5 is very easy. 10, you know, maybe a few hours to play. But try out all the classes. See which one you like. My biggest problem is I started the game out several times and didn't get into it. I tried out a lore master. I hated it. I played it. I just couldn't get into it. I tried a hunter because that was incredibly popular. I hated the hunter. And then finally I tried the champion, and I loved the champion. I liked the defender too. And that's, you know, that's what you need to do. It's like my friend's playing a minstrel. He loves it. Everyone wants him. You know, they're very popular. They actually get more powerful as you play them. You know, so that's really it. I would say find the class that you really enjoy. And that will be your biggest, that's the biggest factor, because you're going to be with that class for a long time and see how you want to interact with other people. Second of all, try to find a group of people. Once you hit the mid-30s or even the high 20s, you're going to get about 10 invitations a day, unsolicited, of people asking you, because the game sort of changes. It becomes very much a – you could play it single player, but it's a lot more fun in groups. So you're going to get a lot of requests to join guilds. So, you know, if you even have 1 or 2 or 3 friends to play with, it's going to be a lot more fun. Even just one. Even if you have just one more friend to play with. I often will go on just me and one of my friends, and we can do a lot of quests. You can even do the group quests together with just 2 or 3 people, no problem. You might have to do them a little later. So that's that. And third is the grind, as I said, happens around level 20. It stinks. It's the worst, absolutely worst time for the grind to happen. But, you know, I would say, you know, just get through it. Like, after on level 23, 24, it starts getting good again. But the low 20s are a little bit difficult. So, you know, try to group up, try to find some people to play with. That's sort of the hardest part of the game. And finally, stay rested as much as possible, because you could easily, this game is fast. You can level up incredibly quickly. I can level up almost, as long as I'm rested, I can usually level up my character within a few hours. Like, we were doing this thing where we were leveling up every night, my friends and I. Like, every single night we were playing, we were leveling up. We went from like 30 to 40 in like 2 weeks. We actually had to stop because we were going too fast. So, you know, it's a bad thing or a good thing. It's actually, I kind of like it. I kind of like having to go up very quickly. It allows me to try out other classes. Now I have two very high level characters. So, you know, I can't do that in too many other MMOs. And I probably spent less time on those two characters than I have on my high level character and WoW. So for me, that's kind of a plus. So that's what I'd recommend. And finally, try out everything. Like, go to all the places. Go to Bree. You know, usually people find one part of the world that they really like. There's so many quests. Like, you will never finish all the quests. At the low levels, there's probably something like 500 quests, and you only need to do like 200 of them. You know, or none of them. I have friends who don't do any quests. They just go around killing things and do crafting. So that's sort of it. And you can play the game however you want. You know, just like, figure out your play style and then just do it that way, because the game will adapt to your needs. So hopefully you found something in there that's useful. Let's see. Next up, I have Lee. He wrote me, "Hey, given your recent interviews with various Wizards of the Coast folks, I was curious what you thought about the various D&D video games. Which have you played? Which you enjoyed? Which made you curse the higher planes? There's still pools of radiance floating around somewhere. I wonder how it holds up. Thanks for the great show, as always, Lehman." Yeah, the old gold box editions of D&D role-playing games, I hate to say this, but I really didn't play them that much. I was from the Wizardry, Bard's Tale, Ultima, and Might and Magic schools. I played those games, and the classic games like Pool of Radiance and stuff, they came out a little bit later. Actually, those came out kind of when I was around in college, so I was not quite playing those as much. I was playing more things like Castle Wolfenstein 3D and Doom 2 and things like that. So I kind of missed that whole era, but I would say very easy. Planescape Torment, many people consider this one of the greatest games of all time. It's still very playable. I actually just replayed it myself, no problem. You know, it's a little tough to, you know, a little hard on the eyes, but the story is so freaking good. It doesn't matter. How about this? You wake up as someone who's immortal, and you have to, the quest of the game is to die. that starts you off. It is an amazing game. Beautifully written. Baldur's Gate 1 and 2. Baldur's Gate 2 is so good. I actually just started playing in a game again, because it is as good as Mass Effect is the story. Baldur's Gate 2 just blows it away. Icewind Dale 1 and 2. Icewind Dale, I loved Icewind Dale so much. There was an expansion, and then there was like this bonus pack that came out for it, this like riddle pack. I played everything in that game. I played that game to death. There's not that many games they say I played to death. I played every inch of that game they had to offer. I loved it so much. It's a very fight. I mean, all you do is fight and kill things, and it's very brutal, but it's so much fun. And all those games I just mentioned, if you go to GameTap, you get all those games. So try out GameTap. I love GameTap. You can play all those games. All of them are available. Once you subscribe, it's like, what, $50 a year, and then you can play any of those games, plus Overlord. Why wouldn't you? And Neverwinter Nights 2, I would say. Neverwinter Nights, I thought, was incredibly boring, very dull. I couldn't even get past like the first act. I couldn't take it. But Neverwinter Nights 2, that's a good game. Really good dialogue. The expansion's even better. That's a lot of fun. So those are my favorite D&D games right there. And let's see, last? I got two more and then we're done. Hey Steve, Pinstar from the boards here, long time listener, first time show mailer. With the massive disappointment that was SimCity Societies, do you think the death knell of formerly good series? Do you think they'll ever make a SimCity 5 or return to the classic formula? Or is this game like Master Orion 3 in the Moo series, or Railroads in the Railroad Tycoon series that finally puts the final nail in the coffin? What do you think? Welcome back, Pinstar. No, of course not. What are you, crazy? SimCity, it's like, let's see, we got The Sims, We got SimCity. We got Spore. Now, SimCity's going to be around forever. They're going to come out with a SimCity 5 one day. You know, they just will. They just keep coming out with new ones as the technology gets better, as there sort of becomes a demand for one. You know, it's just a cycle. SimCity Societies, you know, the game wasn't really getting that much press. You know, it's you know, they really are just catering to the same audiences, and they're kind of milking the same people. But then you have games like SimCity 5, or even The Sims, or I don't know, something like Spore, that goes above this, you know, sort of the core group. That goes to everyone. So yeah, you're gonna see it. I mean, there's that IP is worth billions. I mean, there's no way you're not gonna see it. And speaking of SimCity, if you like SimCity, there is something out there. It is the weirdest browser-based game I've ever played. It is weird. All you do is you make a city. It's called MyMiniCity.com. And you just make a city, and then it gives you a unique URL. And every single time someone clicks on that URL, once per day, you add a person to your population, and your city grows. That's it. There actually is some elements, because you have to balance your factories and your transportation and your pollution, and you have to make sure, and then you get different URLs for those, and you have to make sure that your city is carefully balanced, because if it gets really popular but you don't have enough factories, then unemployment's too high, people start leaving your city. If you don't increase the transport system, people leave your city because it's hard to get around. If you don't decrease the population, if you don't decrease the pollution, same thing. So check it out. It's called MyMiniCity.com. And if you want to check mine out, I started one about a week ago, and it's up. It's pretty good, actually. And people are all just having a lot of fun. It's New Steve City. It's actually new-stevecity.myminiCity.com. So you can just look it up. I'm in the Americas, in the United States. It's New Steve City. It's like New Jack City. That's where I came up with it. It's like, instead of New Jack City, I got New Steve City. So it's new-stevecity.myminiCity.com. If you just click on that, you will visit my city and you'll add a person to the population. And that's it. It's the weirdest thing, but it is close to multiplayer SimCity that I've ever seen. And it is strangely addictive. And I'm doing this thing where I'm taking pictures of the city like every couple of hours, and I'm putting together an animated GIF so we can actually see how the city grows. And then hopefully one day, if it gets really big, I'll just put it all together and show like the city from nothing to a massive city and see how it's growing. It's cool. And it all takes place in the browser. And then finally, I got a question that has nothing to do with gaming, really, except a little. Hey, Steve, I got a question that will probably fall under the everything category of your slogan. Most people have fairly unanimously agreed that 2007 was a very, very good year for gaming. However, I don't think that could be said the same for movies. In my opinion, most of the big hits this year were overwrought snooze fests, such as Spider-Man 3 and Pirates 3, or pointless flashes in the pan like Transformers. So I was curious to hear your take on the movies for the past year. How do you think next year is shaping up? Love this show. Fade to Gray. So yeah, every so often I will talk about movies. A lot of you know I'm a huge movie fan, probably like movies even more than video games. My brother's also in the movie industry. He is a costume designer. If you look up DannyGlicker.com, you'll see a whole bunch of things that he did. So I get to talk to him and hear a lot of stuff that no one ever hears about how movies are made and go on sets and things like that. Yeah, this year really did stink. God, Transformers, hated that movie. It was terrible. I don't know what everyone was going on about that movie, seeing how good it was. And people were like, oh, it's fun. And I love Michael Bay, okay? I love The Rock. I think Rock is a great movie. Armageddon is fantastic, man. I love those type of movies. But, or as I say, Armageddon, the best music video I've ever seen. But Transformers was terrible. Ugh, so bad. I don't know what the heck happened. Spider-Man 3, Spider-Man 2 is probably the greatest superhero movie ever made. In fact, it is way past. It's too good to be a movie. In fact, it's actually shouldn't be a normal movie. And Spider-Man 2 was so good. Spider-Man 3, oof, terrible. And Pirates 3, I actually almost left the theater. That's how bad that was, I thought. And I love the first one. And the second one was, the fight scene at the end was very cool. And yeah, it took literally, if you watch Wired Science, they just had this big thing on Wired Science on the TV show about how it took a billion computers to do that big sequence at the end where they're fighting in the ship. And they said if a normal desktop did it, it would take 1,000 years to render that scene out. Yeah, it was very cool, but you know what? The movie still wasn't that great. I really like smaller movies, of course, like Ratatouille and Knocked Up, and Before the Devil Knows You're Dead. That was very good. Not a family film, I'll tell you that. But King of Kong, I actually still haven't seen it, but everyone's listening to that in the top 10 movies. It came and went real quick. You know, everyone knows what that is. It's the story of the Donkey Kong guys. It comes out on DVD next month. So, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing it. I can't believe I missed it. Everyone I know saw it, said it was fantastic. You know, you got your No Country for Old Men, which was pretty good. The first half I thought was fantastic. Second half, but I have three movies that I thought were really good. Two you've probably heard of, and one you probably never heard of. 300, okay? Now, why do I say that? First of all, I love the movie. And second of all, this is the first video game movie that wasn't a video game. It was actually using video game techniques. It's kind of like The Matrix. It's like they actually used things that you would normally see in a video game, put it towards a movie, and it was hugely successful. And let me tell you, every single person in Hollywood noticed. When 300, they were thinking 300's going to come out. They remember they were talking about this as like maybe 15 million on its opening weekend, maybe 20 at most, 30 at most. And that's like pie in the sky, insane numbers. Nothing will ever do that well. And remember, R-rated movies, very few R-rated movies, like less than like 5 have made more than $100 million. R-rated movies do not do well, period. That movie made $71 million in its opening weekend. It made back everything. It cost only $60 million to make. In Hollywood, almost, you could actually hear a collective jaw drop in Hollywood when that came out. There was the number of people who predicted that 300 was going to do well were the same number of people who predicted the Wii was going to do well, which was no one. But I love that. And you're going to start seeing a lot more movies like that, which is good. The other one that you might have heard of is Hot Fuzz, which is an absolutely hysterical movie. It's a spoof on action movies. Same guys who did Shaun of the Dead and did the Space series. That is a great movie. Surprisingly bloody, actually, and kind of gory. But it is so funny, and it is not only a spoof on action movies, and it's one of the best action movies I've ever seen. So they managed to do both. They managed to make an absolutely fantastic over the top action movie, and then they spoof it at the same time. So Hot Fuzz, definitely rent that. And then finally, this is a movie that no one ever saw. It only came out on the IFC channel, and it's Darkon. That's it. DarkonTheMovie.com, you can check it out. It is a movie about live-action role-playing games. It is a documentary. They go film some LARPers. They show what their life is like. They show them, you know, during their LARPing. They show them in their normal society, like normal life. They show how the two interact and how the two mingle. It is fascinating. And more importantly, I guarantee every single person out there has friends like the people in this movie. If you're a gamer, you're like, oh God, I know people like that. I have friends like that. I've encountered people like that. It was only on the IFC channel a few times. It's coming out on DVD. Again, it's called Darkon. It's D-A-R-K-O-N. It is absolutely great, really interesting. And more importantly, if you're a gamer, you have to see it. It's a documentary on gaming. And it's a good one on top of that. And there's also an interesting article. I think Salon wrote a great article about, they followed up what happened. There's a lot of this. There's this big conflict going on in the documentary, and then they actually did a follow up to see what happened after the documentary ended. And if you do see the movie, I would say check out that article and don't read it yet. Like, see the movie, then read the article, because it tells you, kind of spoils a little bit of what happens in the movie, but it's really fascinating movie. I really wish it came out in the theaters, because this would have been one of those movies that came out that people talked about, but it just came out like on IFC. They showed it like 5 times and that's it. And now it's going to come out on DVD. So it's not out yet. So that's what I thought. And next year, who knows? Next year, I'm just paying attention to the writer's strike, because a lot of my friends are out of work. It's bad. I mean, there's like over 40,000 people, they estimate, are not working. Like, you know, these shows shut down, and you have people like craft services and makeup artists and, you know, all these support people. Even my brother, he was doing the new HBO series for the Vamp. It's Alan Ball's new series. And it shut down. I mean, he got a movie immediately, so he's doing Sean Penn's new movie. But before that, you know, even he would have been affected. And, you know, he was like, damn, you know, this writer's strike is a pain in the neck. It's really messing us up. So next year, I think it's only going to get worse, because it's nothing's getting made right now that requires writers. So, phew, that was a long show mail. And I don't know if I'm going to do that again, but since I had nothing else this week, I thought I'd give it a try. So let's go to final thoughts.
Final thoughts.
So final thoughts is I am going to have a new game contest next year. I'm going to probably try to figure out something so that people can leave comments, because after reading all these amazing entries for the last name of that game, I just want these things to be shared, because people should be reading these things. I wish I could just like take everything and reprint it or something. I mean, unfortunately, it'd be way too much work, but it really was pretty amazing what everyone wrote me. Something else is there's a whole bunch of people that applied for positions on the site. I'm getting down to the final ones. Also, we're redoing the site. We're getting a new server. Actually, a new server is ready to go. I'm just waiting for a time to transfer it over. But there's a lot going on the site, as you can see. Probably new Spore stuff we're going to be seeing probably in January, definitely by February. We're going to start seeing some stuff from Spore. They're ramping up, getting ready to go, so I guarantee we're going to be getting stuff on that. So there's going to be a lot going on the site in 2008. I've just been trying to get everything organized, get all the ducks in a row, because I think 2008 is going to be just insane, to say the least. So yeah, I took some time off, but I'm going to make up for it big time in 2008, I'll tell you that much. So, you know, hope you guys rest up, enjoy whatever games you got during the holiday season. There's not much coming out for the next few months, so you have pretty much all of January and a good amount of February before you have to worry about, you know, looking for new games. Although the Professor Layton game for the DS, which is a new game by Factor 5, is one of the top sellers. I think it was like number 3 in Japan. Yeah, it was number 3 in Japan for the year. It's a DS puzzle game. It looks really good, and that's coming out in February. I can't wait for that one. Anything by those guys is great. Level 5, such good. And by the way, check out Level 5's website. They show their offices, and their offices are amazing. They actually have their boardroom looks like the Jedi Council room from like episodes 1, 2, and 3. So they even have like a little Yoda sitting there. They're very cool. So anyhow, hope you guys have a good year. I will talk to you guys next year with a whole new show, a whole bunch of new things going on. Till then, I will talk to you later. See ya.
Listening to Gaming Steve. Until next week, hey, how about reading a goddamn book for a change?